listeners. I'm Ken Kozlowski, Chief Investment Officer at Equitable Investment Management. It was 3 years ago that we began interviewing selected portfolio managers and strategists for this market and investing podcast series. And what an interesting 3 years it's been. We've talked to more than a dozen investment veterans from many market sectors and asset classes, seeking to bring you their long-term philosophies and strategies at EIM. We hire around 40 investment firms to offer you access to more than 170 investment strategies in roughly 120 funds. So we have a good base to choose from. Today, I'm pleased to be talking with Eduardo Repetto, Chief Investment Officer at Avantis Investors. Eduardo is responsible for directing the research, design, and implementation of the firm's strategies and providing oversight of the investment team. You may recognize the name. Eduardo was previously co-CEO and co-CIO at Dimensional Fund Advisors until 2017, and he brings impressive scientific credentials to his work at Avantis. He's earned a PhD in aeronautics from the California Institute of Technology and a master's degree in engineering from Brown University and a civil engineering degree from the University of Buenos Aires. Today, we're going to talk to Eduardo about the ways he brings scientific rigor to the art of investing in large cap stocks. Welcome, Eduardo.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you for having me here.
All right, let's dive right in. Avantis is very well known for value style investing strategies. How could your investment approach translate to the growth company space?
That's a great question. Yes, so we have many value strategies out in the market, and they are very well known. Just to give you an idea, we started like 40 years ago, and today we are close to $40 billion. So yes, we're known, we have been growing a lot. But in reality, what we are known is for systematizing active management. And what do I mean by that? Is trying to achieve all the goals of active management, but in a systematic way, using science, data, processes. And when you are thinking about growth stocks, are stocks that have fundamentals, have earnings, have balance sheet, have cash flows, and have debt. And so if you combine all these pieces of data with price, you have an idea of how much the price is discounted relative to the price of other securities and how much expected returns you will get from that price. And so what we bring is the use of evaluation process at the security level for the universe of growth stocks in order to try to identify which ones are more attractive than others and then implement that in a portfolio that is managed on a daily basis.
So from that price-sensitive perspective then, and thinking about current valuations now, some investors may wonder if the party is over. But do high PE ratios necessarily indicate the U.S. large cap market is overvalued? Is this a good time for individuals to consider adding a large cap growth strategy to their investment plan?
That's another great question, man. You have a lot of them today. So if you think about large growth stocks as a whole, yeah, the valuation is a little bit rich if you compare that with historical average. But large growth stocks is a big, big universe of stocks. Some of them certainly have valuations that are very, very unattractive. But others have valuations that are very attractive. So the goal of creating a strategy that can help investors achieve their goals is creating a portfolio that uses the attractive securities as much as possible in order to deliver value added. So we analyze every security in the large growth space. We differentiate the ones that we are expected to deliver to clients versus the ones that we expect not to be so attractive, and then we create a portfolio that is diversified, that is managed on a daily basis to consider changes in prices and fundamentals in order to deliver value added. So yes, in general, large growth stocks may not be attractive, but again, inside that universe, there are many stocks that look much, much better from the point of view of valuation ratios, from the point of view of attractiveness.
So tell us more about your valuation discipline and how it helps to identify companies that offer high expected growth potential for investors.
Yeah, so for us, as I mentioned earlier, it's all about valuations, because you can have a company that has amazing growth potentials, great earnings, amazing balance sheet, but if the price is too high, then you're not going to get great returns from that company. So everything is related to how much you pay for what you get. It's the same as going to a restaurant. You know, you can have a great meal, but the price is extremely high, you're not going to get a great dinner. If you have a great meal, but the price is low, suddenly everything is amazing. And so when you're thinking about the valuation of a company, you have to consider the information in the balance sheet. Is a company for liabilities or have a good equity position? You have to consider the information on expected cash flows. Is a company expecting to get good cash flows? But you also have to consider how much you pay for that company. And so if a company tends to have good balance sheet, good cash flows, and the price is low enough, then that company should be a great investment opportunity. So that process that I just described in course, you can think about that process in a systematic way, using data coming on a daily basis on financials of the company and prices coming also on a continuous basis. And then you can differentiate the attractiveness of some company versus the others and put all that information in a portfolio that is trying to achieve a higher expected returns using what you mentioned, a holistic investment approach, a holistic valuation of the company in order to identify attractiveness.
Tell us how geopolitical and macroeconomic risks factor into your process. And can you help investors avoid the pitfalls of emotional investing in periods of high volatility?
Two questions. Let's split them apart. Let's speak first about geopolitical and macroeconomic risk. The beauty that we're speaking about U.S. large cap stocks. So this question shrinks quite a lot when they're speaking about U.S. large cap stock. Imagine if we're speaking about emerging market small caps, then we're going to start speaking about China, Taiwan, Middle East, a lot of other things. So the geopolitical risk when you're speaking about large cap stocks is still there, but they are not so dramatic as in other asset classes. You have the largest companies in the world, the more liquid market in the world. What makes you believe that prices are incorporating information on geopolitical risk or macroeconomic risk very, very, very fast. And so when we manage the portfolios, as I mentioned before, we're considering information in those prices on a daily basis. It's not that we buy a security and hold it for 12 months. We buy it today because it's attractive today, but it's tomorrow that company, for whatever reason, stops being attractive, we have the opportunity to sell it. We are not stuck with the buy and hold strategy typical of indices. We can make decisions based on today's information, and that ameliorates any kind of risk that you can have there. When you speak about the pitfall on emotional decisions, this is very, very important. There is a lot of articles about making emotional decisions instead of factual and logic decisions about investment. And you mentioned high volatility. The market has high volatility, not as high as in periods of high distress, but you have a lot of movements up and down. I think about the market having high volatility the same as flying by plane. I love going on vacation to far and remote places. But flying by plane, in particular when the plane moves up and down, is not pleasant. But if I want to enjoy my vacation, I have to be able to cope with the plane going up and down and shaking a little bit. Investing is the same. You have daily volatility. If your market's going up and down, sometimes in crazy ways, because of news or because of speculation or because of rumors or because of whatever is happening. But if you buy a well-diversified portfolio and with some logical strategy, and you have focus on the long term, you're probably going to be okay. much better than making decisions on volatility. Oh, the market goes up today, I'm selling, or the market goes down today, I'm selling, tomorrow buying, selling. Just the process of reacting on volatility includes, you know, so many costs, so many taxation events, that it's better to think, I want a good strategy that I can trust and focus on my long-term goals. And that's what we're trying to deliver in our strategies.
I love that plane analogy. I love it. And here's another multi-part question. So would the Magnificent Seven make it through your fundamental valuation, cash flow, or profitability screens currently? And how do you balance their fundamental characteristics, which may not point to higher expected returns, against the tracking risk of not owning them? And then, what kinds of deviations from cap weighting should investors feel comfortable with in these kinds of high PE, high momentum stocks?
Yeah, okay, another question, and let's try to answer. Magnificent Seven, it's a great name, but it's funny that the Magnificent Seven were not the largest seven stocks in the index at the beginning of 2020. At the beginning of 2023, end of 2022. It's some of them were the largest seven company, but some others not. So these Magnificent Seven companies that are eight stocks, because Alphabet, so were selected after the fact, saying, oh, these are great performing companies, let's call them Magnificent Seven. And last year they did great. They did much better than any other set of seven companies in large cap growth that I can have in mind, and certainly beat the index and the S&P and everything else. Now, not all these seven companies are the same when you're looking from valuations. Some of them, in reality, all of these seven companies will be in a large growth strategy managed by Avantis today. Some of them will be overweighted, some of them will be underweight. The ones that are underweighted are the ones that the cash flows are not so attractive and the price is too high relative to the equity or balance sheet that the company has. Why? Because if you pay too much for a stream of expected cash flows, you're not going to have high expected returns. So those kind of companies, we tend to underweight and, or in some cases, completely exclude. In the case of the Magnificent Seven, our strategies probably tend to underweight even the significance of those companies in the large growth space. Some other of these Magnificent Seven will look attractive and we will slightly overweight those securities. So when you're managing strategy in large cap growth, it's not a zero or one decision. It's not I buy it or I don't buy it. There is a continuous of decisions that we can say, I completely screw the company or I buy it at different degrees of weight. I can underweight it, the security, or I can overweight the security, or I can buy it at market weight. Depending on how attractive or really unattractive the security is, you can go from complete excluding to underweighting to buy it at market weight to overweight. And that's a decision that's, as Ken was saying, based on risk management. And so we are making trade-off on how much diversification we want in the portfolio, how much expected tracking error we want in the portfolio versus the ability to add value. And this is nothing new if you start thinking. If you think about modern portfolio theory, it's telling us that it's not just about returns. Because if you just want a portfolio with high returns, you buy only one company, the one that has the highest return. It's a trade-off always between risk and return. And so that's what we're doing. We're trading off the ability to deliver a portfolio that's value versus managing the risk embedded in holding a subset of securities of the market, the subset that we think that is going to produce our performance. Now, that is done in our case on a daily basis in order to always have a portfolio with many securities, trying to minimize company-specific risk.
Great, and thanks for that. And final question, how does your process differ from a typical enhanced beta strategy? And tell us about the importance of frequent rebalancing in your portfolio And why should trading activity outside the traditional rebalancing period of an index help your returns?
This is a great question, and I'm going to divide it in two. So why is the first one is why we are different from the typical enhanced beta strategy? Well, the typical enhanced beta strategy is an index. There are many, many variations of this, but it's an index. Instead of being an S&P 500 index or Russell 1000 growth index, it's an index that changes the weight of the security selection, but buys securities and holds them for a predefined period of time. So you buy it today and hold it for 4 months, 6 months, 1 year. And certainly that's suboptimal. And the best example to think how suboptimal it is, I will speak a little bit more about that, but the first is let's go to an example. Remember a stock called GameStop. GameStop was a tiny company that no one knew and was in the small cap universe of most indices that you have out there. Yeah. Indices buy securities on one day and hold them no matter what happened with prices, in some cases for 12 months, a humongous amount of time. Well, GameStop, that small cap company that no one pay attention, jump in price to $500. So it went to be a tiny company to a $23 billion company. So do you think that a $23 billion company should be in a small cap portfolio? No. Well, if you were in an index fund, that company was in your portfolio because the rebalancing of the index, the reconstitution in the index, was not on the day that GameStop jumped in price. So you see GameStop go up and GameStop goes down. So daily rebalancing is important. Considering daily information when you are making investment decisions, buying, holding, or selling, is super important. It's the same as choosing your clothes. You are in New York now, Ken. It's super cold. I have a son in New York, and he says, I wish I was in a warmer place because it's super cold. So if you pick today your clothes for the whole year, and you have your overcoat, your hand gloves, your scarf and everything, and you hold that clothes for a whole year, I'm pretty sure that New York in July is going to be very, very uncomfortable for you. Mm-hmm. You have to consider daily information when you're making investment decisions. And it's not logical not to do so. And we do that information to make all the rebalancing decisions of the portfolio.
Eduardo, you've given us a lot to think about. Thank you so much for your time. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. We'll be back in touch soon with more news about markets and investing.
This discussion is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice. The views and opinions expressed are provided by the speakers as of the date of their contributions and do not necessarily represent the views of Equitable Investment Management Group, LLC, or its affiliates. Any such views and opinions are subject to change at any time based on market or other conditions and are not intended to be a forecast of future events, a guarantee of future results, or investment advice. Securities and sectors referenced should not be construed as a solicitation or recommendation or be used as the sole basis for any investment decision. The information presented is not intended to constitute an investment recommendation for or advice to any specific person.
Investing involves risk, including loss of principal invested. Individual investor results and tax ramifications will vary.